Music 103, 24 hours a day. KMOX FM, St. Louis.
That's the theme from the Sears Radio Theater. Tonight's story is a comedy with Andy Griffith as your host. Here's a preview.
I should think that by just slowing down your speech and carefully avoiding rhymes, you would soon get over this malady.
That's what you do, but you're not me. It isn't that I won't or shan't. I would if I could, but I can't.
This is Andy Griffith. I'm glad to say that we have something of a scoop for you this evening, because with us in the studio is the one man who is able to tell, at last, the story of the first recorded case of dysphemia glossopoiesis. Now, don't be alarmed by that term. It will be fully explained by Mr. Ned Kesey, the man I'm talking about. And here he is.
First, may I say that I've been a great admirer of yours, Mr. Griffiths.
Why, thank you. And it's Griffith, by the way. No S.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry.
No damage. Would you start, Mr. Kesey?
Right. Well, my name is Ned W. Kesey, and I am the husband of Jane Kesey, who is really at the center of this story, so to speak. We've been married for 8 years, when suddenly we had an experience that was kind of hairy, if you know what I mean. Well, there are worse things, I'm sure, than what we went through, but when it's happening, you feel you're in the power of some strange force that will never let go of you. It all began one April morning. My alarm clock went off, as usual, at 7 a.m.
And so, at 7 in the morning, in the bedroom of Ned and Jane Kesey, an alarm clock goes off. And that's only the beginning of our story.
Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week, brought to you in Elliot Lewis production of The Sears Radio Theater. Our story, The Strange Affliction by Norman Corwin. Our stars, Nanette Fabre and Steve Franken. The Sears Radio Theater is brought to you by Sears Roebuck and Company. Sears, where America shops for value.
Left us, Mr. Kesey, with the alarm clock going off in your bedroom.
Right. We got up, dressed, and went down to have breakfast. It was kind of an unsettled morning. You know how it is in early spring. Jane made herself a couple of eggs sunny side up, and I was eating pancakes with molasses on them and reading the sports page while Jane was reading the news.
More coffee?
Mm-hmm, thanks. I've got a feeling it's going to rain.
Here or on the plane in Spain?
I didn't pay any special attention to that answer because she was obviously quoting from that famous song in the musical. You know, the one that goes, the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plane. Not a very good singer, but anyway, I'm sure you've heard it. Well, as I say, when Jane answered as she did, I didn't suspect anything out of the way. What does the weather prediction say?
About today?
Well, of course about today. I'm not asking about yesterday.
Well, the guess today is showers towards the evening hours.
And what about tonight?
Probability of rain, but light.
Then I'd better take an umbrella.
Well, there isn't any.
No umbrella? But we had two.
I lost one, and so did you.
Why are you replying to everything I say with a rhyme?
Am I?
Yes.
Is that a crime?
Are you mocking me? If you are, you'll rue it.
Well, I didn't intend to do it.
Come on now, will you cut that out?
Please, don't shout.
All right already, enough's enough.
Why should you be in a huff?
Mock me once more, and you'll really regret it.
See here, if you think... Oh, well, forget it.
No, finish what you started to say.
Very well. Let me put it just this way. You threaten me once more, and I'll leave you flat.
Look, I didn't want to have a spat. But damn it, you must realize that. You cannot treat me like a child. I don't begin to be beguiled by silly games like when you play at rhyming everything I say.
Oh, my poor Ned. Do you know what you just said?
Yes. See what you made me do?
Why blame me? You're the one who spoke in rhymes just now, not I.
But you induced it. I don't deny that I'm upset. Where are my glasses?
You're wearing them. You've spilled molasses on your vest.
You've messed my morning up. I've got to go. I'm late. I'll call you from the office. Oh, great. We sound like a couple of teenage bards, like a couple of cheapy greeting cards.
I'm sure there's some explanation why.
Well, you find out what it is. Goodbye. As I drove to work, I could hardly keep my mind on the road. I was afraid to think in words, lest they rhyme. But after a few miles, the sense of alarm wore off, and I felt free of any compulsion to rhyme, and so I tested myself by speaking aloud. When in the course of human events, the Dodgers dropped 2 to the Giants, now is the time for all good men. And suddenly, you know, the whole thing seemed to be comic. I figured that Jane, who really has a great sense of humor, had just been pulling my leg. That maybe she had practiced that routine, had worked it up into a sort of production. Anyway, when I reached the office...
Good morning, Mr. Kesey.
Morning.
Morning, Ned.
Oh, morning, Mr. Kestenbaum. The first thing I did when I sat at my desk was to call Jane.
Hello?
Jane, listen. I'm sorry about losing my cool this morning. You know, I really didn't have enough sleep, and when I was dressing, I couldn't find my wallet, and then when I got to the table and read the bad news...
What bad news?
Well, the Dodgers dropped a doubleheader, and now they're 6 games back of the Giants. They're in a bad way.
You don't say.
And then when you started to make rhymes of everything I said, I thought you were playing some kind of silly mocking game.
Just the same.
No, let me finish. I should have realized that you were just exercising your sense of humor, right? Your sense of play, really, which at times can be frightening, you know, and...
Frightening?
Well, yes, I mean...
Well, that's enlightening.
No, what I mean is that it's sometimes scary how clever you can be. And what I should have done, instead of getting all worked up and everything, was to relax and roll with the punches, so to speak. And I should have enjoyed your mimicking. I mean, you were giving me the hot foot, and so what? I reacted like a square when I should have appreciated your humor and realized that you were poking...
Just a minute, Ned. I wasn't joking.
What?
You heard me.
You were serious?
I was in my right mind. I was not delirious.
Now, wait a minute, baby.
After you left, I thought that maybe it would leave me. I had to speak to someone, and so I, like a dumb one, picked up the telephone and called the market to order food. I was appalled.
Appalled? What happened?
When I started to read the shopping list, the words all took a crazy twist. They came together in a sort of jingling. The clerk, I'm sure, thought, who's this dingling?
Why? What did you order?
You really want to know?
Yes.
Well, I said to that jerk, I said...
What jerk?
The clerk. I said, I want a tin of salmon, a pound of brie, a stalk of winter celery, a can of clams, a bag of yams. Oh, and if you have some deviled hams from Poland, I'll take 2.
And did he...
No, wait, I'm not yet through. A pound of peppers red, a loaf of pumpernickel bread, a bunch of parsley, a box of... Oh, what's his... Oh, what do you call it? Matzes. A pack of Oriental teas, black olives and some feta cheese, a jar of marinated herring, at which point he started swearing.
He swore at you?
Yes. Oh, Ned, I'm really getting scared. The way that everything I say gets paired.
Darling, something's very wrong. Stay right where you are. I'm coming home. I excused myself to the boss, told him it was an emergency. It's an emergency, Mr. Replogle.
Yeah.
And I left the office and sped back home over the freeway. And I mean sped. I must have been going 65 when...
Okay, what's the rush?
Emergency at home.
What kind of emergency?
Illness.
What kind of illness?
My wife can't stop rhyming.
Say again?
My wife
can't stop rhyming.
That's right.
Did you call an ambulance?
Oh, no, officer. It's not the kind of thing you call an ambulance for.
That's what I was thinking, too. Let's see your license, please.
Oh, yes, sir. It happened only this morning. It just came right out of the blue.
Yeah.
It's so weird. I mean, whenever I said something, she'd answer with a rhyme. Anything ever like that ever happened to you? I mean, I don't know what you'd call it.
Would you please take your license out of your wallet?
You see? See? Call it wallet. You're doing it. It was just like that.
See your registration, please.
Here.
You're still at this address?
Yes, sir. That was all I needed. By the time I reached home, I was as rattled as Jane was. Jane? 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 Jane, sitting in the den, staring at the wall. Jane, are you all right?
No, I'm a fright.
Now, don't worry. Whatever it is that's disturbing you, we'll track it down. In the meantime, just remember that it's bearable. How do you feel?
Terrible.
Do you have any idea what triggered it?
No. This morning, I figured it was just a passing flurry of rhymes. But now I worry that I'm stuck with it.
Have you tried deliberately not to rhyme?
Yes, but I had no luck with it.
You know what I think? Maybe a shock would stop it.
Drop it. I don't fancy being electrocuted.
No, I don't mean a jolt of power.
Oh, you mean like a cold shower?
Exactly.
I hate cold showers.
But you won't be under it for hours. Isn't it worth at least a try?
Well, all right. I suppose it's do or die.
You feel any better?
No, only wetter.
Well,
Well, stay under it some more. Is it easing?
No, damn it, I'm freezing.
Just give it a little more time.
No, I'd rather rhyme than freeze to death. Here, dry me. Oh, it's so easy for you to try me under the cold tap. I feel like ice. Rub me harder. There, that's nice.
Well, so it didn't work.
No dice. I'm really beginning to despair.
Oh, come now, Janie, come. There, there, we've only just begun to fight.
Do you think I'll ever be all right?
Of course. There are all kinds of ways out.
I want one before the day's out.
We'll soon discover just what goes on.
But first, suppose I get my clothes on.
We tried other things. Jane stood on her head for 10 minutes at a time. She didn't speak for a whole day. We jogged. We swam. We abstained. We lifted weights. We tried fasting. Nothing worked. Then I suggested putting marbles in her mouth. I had read somewhere that the great orator Demosthenes did that to cure himself of stuttering. So I fed her a dozen little glass aggies.
Wait, for heaven's sake, that's all I can take.
It makes you sound, uncouth.
What's so funny? I could break a tooth. Why are you wearing that silly grin? How long do I have to keep these in?
Well, give them a chance to prove their case.
Oh, was that nice to spit them in my face?
I shouldn't have consented in the first place. All the while my jaw was buckling, you stood there chuckling.
I'm sorry, it just looked so funny, Jane.
I did I? You give me a pain.
Well, it took her quite a while to get over my having laughed at her discomfiture. Can't you find it in your heart to forgive?
Not as long as I live.
Well, what can I do or say?
Nothing, just go away.
But after a spell, she calmed down and went back to being miserable full-time about her problem. She had justifiably blamed me for laughing. But who could blame her for crying?
By now, it can be assumed that I am doomed.
Oh, no, 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 no. This has to be only a temporary affliction.
An affliction of my diction.
Aha! Say, that gives me an idea. I think what you should do is go to a speech therapist. I imagine it's the sort of thing a therapist deals with all the time. Maybe I can find one in the yellow book.
Well, anything. Go ahead. Look.
Not a matter for a speech therapist, Mrs. Kesey. You seem to speak without impediment, but in a pattern that seems, to say the least, very curious.
Oh, I'm so angry with myself. I'm furious.
Oh, you mustn't blame yourself. Whatever else it may be, it's,
Involuntary?
Correct. I couldn't begin to hazard a guess as to the cause of your complaint, but I would suggest that you see a psychiatrist. The problem lies more in that field, I should think.
You mean to see a shrink?
Yes. The investigation might have to be extensive.
But wouldn't that be expensive?
Yeah, possibly. But can you afford to go around indefinitely speaking verse?
No, nothing could be worse.
As a suggestion, have you tried trapping yourself into words or phrases or sentences that would be difficult, if not impossible, to rhyme?
Time after time.
That's hard to believe. I should think that by just slowing down your speech and carefully avoiding rhymes, you would soon get over this malady.
That's what you do, but you're not me. It isn't that I won't or shan't. I would if I could, but I can't.
Well, I'm more certain now than ever that you should see someone in psychiatry. The problem's bigger than it looks. There's nothing like it in the books.
Did you hear yourself just now? Wow.
Hear what?
You spoke in rhymes.
Oh, come. Nothing of the sort. I'm afraid your time's up. I'm sorry. I wish you the best. And I hope it's not too long a quest before you find relief. Good grief.
Why, what's the matter?
Suddenly, I feel quite busy.
Well, now that'll keep you busy. My husband caught it the very same way. But he got over his. Good day.
Oi. Day.
Well, Mr. Griffith, when Jane told me what happened to the therapist, I began to worry all over again.
Why, Mr. Kesey?
Well, man, because I had sort of blocked out that I had caught Jane's trouble from her. I had convinced myself that it never happened. But after the therapist, there was no guarantee that I might not catch it again and get a relapse, so to speak. And if that happened, how could I show my face at the office?
I see what you mean. But go on with your story.
Well, I didn't pick the psychiatrist out of the yellow pages. I made an appointment for Jane with Dr. Ludwig Garmisch, one of the top men in town.
Most interesting, most interesting. I have, of course, seen many cases of dysphemia, which is a neurotic disorder of speech, but nothing which fits this description. I once treated two patients who spoke in reverse. One of them Dr. Furbish sent me, the other a Quaxent.
Do all psychiatrists speak with an accent?
Mostly in place, my dear. However, yours is a most peculiar case. Fantastisch. I would first like to make a little test, yes? I give you words, you answer quickly before you can think. There is something I will know by this.
What do you hope to show by this?
Well, rhyming is not that easy, you see. Most people, when you ask them quick to give a rhyme for a word, they have to search for it. Now, it's one thing to end a sentence with a rhyme, but another to give them right away without thinking a rhyme. Do you follow? So, you are ready, yes?
More or less.
Remember, answer quick. Now, first word, army.
Pastrami.
Dimple.
Simple. Pimple. Jacob Gimple.
Just one word is enough. Christmas.
Isthmus.
Aristophanes.
Get up off your knees.
Putt-putt.
Scuttlebutt.
Radio.
Hadey-ho.
Appeal.
Schlemiel.
Lostock.
Vladivostok.
Nicholas.
Ticklus.
Bursitis.
Bursitis.
Au gratin.
Latin.
No, it's French.
Wench.
Tally.
Finale.
Well, I guess finale is a good word to end on. Okay. Remarkable. Tell me, was your mother ever infatuated by some doggerel?
Oh, she never knew a dog that well.
I see. Was your father by any chance a poet?
Not that you'd know it.
Was your childhood happy?
No, rather scrappy.
Did you enjoy to skip with rope?
Nope.
Were you ever visited by Cupid?
Oh, I think that question's stupid.
Let me decide, please. Are you very fond of sewing?
Dr. Garmisch, where is this going?
Well, let me be frank. You are suffering from an acute form of dysphemia, which is unprecedented. So I am going to give it the name dysphemia glossopoiesis, from the Greek glosso, meaning tongue, and poiesis, meaning poetry. You see? I have given a new word to the language.
So I have glossopoiesis.
At least that's my thesis. Now, rhythm, you see, if you bear with me, rhythm is part of the natural order. But sometimes it gets very close to the border of angst or anxiety, should there be such of it as you have been having, and having too much of it. Now, I'm fully aware that whatever you do with rhymes, I'm now doing as you do. To laymen, of course, this may seem outrageous, but scientifically, you're contagious. I think for this reason, you should be confined until we can find what goes on in your mind.
Confined? Dr. Garmisch, you must be kidding.
Then you're not serious about ridding yourself by whatever degrees of your disease?
Please.
Let me call up your husband. Where does he work?
Kassenbaum, Grackle, and Burke.
Dr. Garmisch persuaded Jane to go to a psychiatric institute for tests. He had gotten over his glossopoiesis almost as quickly as I had, although every now and then I thought I detected a little relapse, like when he asked me whether I had tried ways of getting rid of Jane's rhyming, and I answered, yes, I tried many things, but all in vain, man.
One of the first things we must do is make a brain scan.
You see what I mean? Vain man and brain scan? But these lapses were few and far between. Anyway, Jane, who was getting pretty depressed by now, agreed to enter the Harold G. Squamous Jr. Institute of Neurological Symptomatology. Well, let me tell you, they gave Jane every test known to science and a few that weren't. It seemed like every branch of medicine ran right through her room. Besides a squadron of psychiatrists, there was a teratologist.
Everything it checks out fine, right down to your feet.
So now can I eat?
And a hematologist.
Your red count's normal, so's the white.
Uncontrollable delight.
And a traumatologist.
We can find no precipitating cause.
Applause, applause.
And a cytologist.
We can't fault a single cell.
Oh, swell.
And an endocrinologist.
Your system's A-OK down to the last gland.
Strike up the band.
You couldn't blame Jane for feeling bitter. Here she was, a sort of prisoner in this institute, being treated like a guinea pig. She got tired of them trying all kinds of things on her, and she finally rebelled.
Here's some sodium amytal. I won't take it, damn it all.
You want to get daily steam baths in a sauna.
Well, I'm not gonna. We propose to put you on a liquid diet. I don't buy it.
Why not try it?
Quiet.
After a while, she got tired of resisting, especially since she wasn't making any progress. And so they resumed experimenting. They tried sedatives, tranquilizers, narcosynthesis, antihistamines, hot compresses, cold compresses. but nothing made the slightest difference. Do you feel any change?
No, just strange.
How are you today?
Go away.
And when none of those things worked, we tried bringing in various people outside of medicine and psychiatry. There was this faith healer, the Reverend Vocal Richards, who came with a small choir that sang a few numbers, and then the Reverend went to work on her.
Dear one, dwell not upon the affliction of words that hath afflicted thee, but look up to heaven and trust in the word, and thy name will be wrote in the book of life. Hallelujah. And all that man uttereth, yea, and that goes for woman too, all that they uttereth is but vanity, praise the Lord. And all the words that are uttered by man that are born of woman, all of them are as the dust of the field. Yea, verily, they are as the sands of the desert. Hallelujah. And they are like unto the words that cometh from out of the mouths of babes and sucklings. Hallelujah. And are as the drops of water in the sea.
But what has that got to do with me?
When the Reverend didn't get to first base, someone suggested a witch doctor who happened to be in the city because he was part of a touring dance group from Africa. And this witch doctor came in with a lot of feathers and stuff, and he went into his magic chant.
Haramagong, barabuka nagumbu yorabalinga, torawengi, kulongoluk durandura, warabahini, tuambalong walamolo, turambula yurambi, and also nelungalu, kamgalula. Jeril Deri Luka Kurajong. I have spoke. Now I sing. Ula Wagula Gumbula Koko Uku Bamdo Uku Pangako Mukuke Bumako. I have end my song. Do you feel of some change?
No. Can you sing Home on the Range?
Well, so nothing seemed to be of the slightest help. The Institute kept giving us a lot of double talk, and because it was so expensive being a patient there, Jane insisted on going home. By now, the fear of contagion had passed, because although some of us, like the speech therapist and Dr. Garmisch and I myself, had caught the symptoms, we soon got over it. But not poor Jane. She began to think of herself as a sort of typhoid Mary.
I'm just a jinx. This whole thing stinks.
Of course, we couldn't keep it from the neighborhood forever, and I must say people were nice about it. They made various suggestions, none of them of any use. Until my brother-in-law blew in from Seattle to spend a few days with us. His name is Harry Krill, and he runs a diner that he calls Krill's Grill, which is worse than anything that ever came from Jane. I just had to say that. I was listening to the radio one evening when Harry popped up with a notion that stunned us both.
Ned, will you turn down the radio? There's something I'd like to ask you.
Wait a minute, Harry. I want to catch this commercial. What's your idea?
Has there been any publicity on Jane?
Oh, hell no. Harry, we've done everything we can to keep this out of the papers. But that's all we need, people calling us up to hear Jane speak in rhymes.
Don't you know you've been missing out on a bonanza?
What do you mean, a bonanza?
Well, you've both been looking at this thing entirely the wrong way. It's a talent, not a liability, that Jane has. How many people in this whole world can go around rhyming spontaneously?
Yeah. Garmisch said there's never been a case like it. He even had to invent the name for it. Glossopoesis?
Oh, well, there you are. Instead of getting Jane all kinds of doctors, you should have gotten her an agent.
An agent?
Yeah. I know a guy who knows Sam Weisbord, the head of the William Morris Agency.
Well, what did he do?
Line up interviews. Line up some guest appearances. Advice and consent. Maybe even Jane could get her own TV show.
Harry, are you out of your head? But Jane has never been on TV.
So what of it? How about those people on those game shows? They've never been on TV either. And look what they get.
Yeah, what do they get?
Rich.
Oh, I don't know.
Why have you let me handle it?
Well, for one thing, you'd have to persuade Jane to begin with.
Listen, she's the most sensible girl in the world. I know my sister. If she understands that she can be respected for a special talent and then, well, get paid for it instead of being looked at like some sort of weirdo or avoided for fear of contamination, do you think she'll hesitate for a second?
Well, you ask her. And he did ask her. He persuaded her. And the first thing you know, there she was on the front page of the Times under a big headline.
Rhyme comes easy for Mrs. Kesey.
Followed by an interview with a female reporter who came to the house. It was a long interview, just chock full of Jane Kesey rhymes.
And now a final question, Mrs. Kesey. Do you find that the prospect of spending the rest of your life automatically making jingles, do you find this depressing?
I did once, but I think of it now as a blessing.
Ah, well, Ben, I'm glad for you.
I am too.
Thank you, Mrs. Kesey, for letting me call.
Not at all.
Well, that interview really stirred things up. We got calls from all over, including the Poetry Society, the Guinness Book of Records, People Magazine, Scientific American, Psychology Today, and Verbal Quarterly. Every mail brought a new proposition.
Take a letter to Mrs. Kesey.
Do you spell that name B-I-S-S-U-S?
No, I have a cold. M-R-S, Mrs. Would you like to write a book about your experience? We would pay you an advance against royalties and furnish you with a qualified ghostwriter, should you need one. We have had very good success with ghost-written books. In fact, this company proudly boasts...
No, I don't believe in ghosts. Next.
Dear Mrs. Kesey, enclosed, please find in this crate an epic poem which I have written about the march of womankind since the dawn of civilization. I would like to have your opinion of it. It now runs 3,627 pages, but I am thinking of trimming 15 or 20 pages to tighten it up. As I want to get this off to a publisher real soon, I would appreciate your writing something immediately that I could quote on the back of the jacket. Perhaps you could point out how my handling of the subject is comprehensive, lyrical, sensitive, and even tender.
Return to sender.
There were nibbles from TV and radio news programs wanting to come to the house and talk to Jane and me. Look at this, Jane, from CBS.
Is it better than the one from PBS?
Well, I don't know yet. Oh, and here's one from the BBC.
As well as Canada. Look, the CBC.
Gee.
NBC asks, do we wish to be interviewed? But isn't it rude not to mention a fee? Don't you agree? Or is it not their policy?
No, it's not. By the way, the mail is piling up. You've got to begin answering soon because this pile grows so.
Yes, I suppose so.
And then, of all things, Dr. Garmisch asked for a percentage of whatever action might develop as a reward for having invented the term glossopoiesis. When he proposed this, I said to him, aren't you being a little greedy, Doctor?
You're not exactly needy, Doctor.
Ah, but have you never heard of the importance of packaging? Once you give a name to something, it has identity. It takes on a whole new life. You know what is a logo?
Yes.
No.
It can be very influential. Listen to how beautiful it sounds. Dysphemia glossopoiesis. Even if people are not interested in the phenomenon of a lady who cannot stop rhyming, they will find themselves attracted by the unusualness of those words. They will say to each other, they will say, did you see that program about dysphemia glossopoiesis last night? And they will be proud to be able to pronounce it, let alone to know what it means. In this way, my dear Mr. and Mrs. Kesey, especially Mrs. Kesey, the condition of which you have the distinction to be the first known living case will become as famous throughout the world as swine flu, athlete's foot, tennis elbow.
But as you well know, all of those names are simple to spell. And more than that, what really counts is that they're easy to pronounce. Whereas dysphemia...
Are you telling me that you would be willing to change glossopoiesis to something vulgar, something common, like stiff neck or water on the knees, something ordinary and even cheap?
Oh, for heaven's sake, why don't you keep...
Something which has no style, no cadence, no euphony?
You know what you can do for me? Leave me alone. I've earned the right to profit from my talent, to make money off it, if money's to be made. Besides, you've already been paid.
Oh, Ned, Jane, have you no loyalties?
Not when it comes to royalties.
It got bigger and bigger. There were gifts, requests for Jane to lecture, invitations to attend the opening of supermarkets, requests that she serve on various committees. None of which she accepted, of course, because we didn't want to overexpose her. We wanted things to build, and it did build. Things got so that there were rhyming ads in the newspapers, and even book titles started to rhyme. She got to enjoy all the excitement. She thrived on her celebrity, so to speak. And then she was asked to meet with some top network executives, the big brass, about a program series to be built around her. And she met with them. And charmed them all with her wit and rhyming ability.
Now, in order to get the whole country alerted and excited about you, we're going to start you off with an appearance on the Calvin Fox program. It's before a big studio audience, and everybody watches it.
Yes, we at first thought that people would think it was all too much of a gag, so we took a poll, and we were all more than gratified when we saw the results of the gag poll.
In other words, you ran it up the flagpole.
Terrific. Terrific.
Yes.
And so it was arranged. A contract was drawn up, a wonderful deal. Great money, residuals, all kinds of extras that I won't go into. And to kick things off came the interview with Calvin Fox. We were all there in the studio on the big night. Garmisch, my brother-in-law Harry, Sam Weisbord, even the witch doctor.
And now, as our very special guest, the woman who has attracted so many headlines and aroused so much curiosity among scholars, scientists, and laymen, both in this country and abroad. The little woman who has taken over the headlines from inflation, energy, and politics, Jane Kesey. Welcome, Jane. It's good of you to come. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you. There was nowhere else to go.
Well, apparently the reports are true about your sense of humor.
Oh, is that the rumor?
Oh, that was one of them. Is it true, Jane, that you've been rhyming like this nonstop for some months now?
And how?
And that at first you were distressed about your inability to stop rhyming so persistently and wildly.
To put it mildly.
What did you do to try to stop?
Well, suppose we begin at the very top.
All right. Let's go back to the beginning. When did you first notice that you were replying to everything said to you in the form of rhyme endings to sentences?
It happened at breakfast one morning. My husband asked me if the weather report called for rain, and I said that it did.
Go on.
And he noticed that every time he said anything and I replied, it was with a rhyming partner to what he had just said. And he thought I was mocking him, so he resented it, naturally.
And you started to quarrel?
Yes. As a matter of fact, he got quite angry, and I tried to explain that I wasn't doing it intentionally, you know.
I see. Mrs. Kesey, are you conscious of the fact that you haven't spoken a single rhyme since you started to explain what happened?
I haven't?
You were not aware of that?
Well, no.
Are you kidding me now?
No, really. I wasn't aware that I had stopped rhyming.
Hold it right there. I must say to those in the audience who booed just now that Mrs. Kesey is not faking. I can see that she's very disturbed.
I really am.
I'm sure it's only a momentary aberration. Surely, Jane, after all these months in which you've been unable to speak without rhyming, the ability hasn't suddenly abandoned you, has it?
Well, I don't know.
Perhaps it's just that you've never been in front of cameras and a studio audience before. Perhaps all it'll take is a little priming to get you back in the rhythm of things. May I give you a few lines to get you started again?
Oh, yes, please.
Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of...
Mario Andretti?
No, Jane. Now, surely you must know that famous poem by Longfellow.
Oh, yes,
sir. Well, never mind. I'll try another. A diller, a dollar, a 10 o'clock scholar. What makes you come so soon? You used to come at 10 o'clock, and now you come at...
12? Oh,
well, there went the whole ball game. They canceled the contract. People called Jane a fraud, and they made jokes about her. It was disgusting.
I believe I can explain what happened, Mrs. Kesey.
Don't bother.
You see, there is in the multiphasic personality a phenomenon in which the hypoglossal impulse is stimulated within the infundibulum of the pituitary.
She really doesn't want to hear this, you know.
But there's no charge for what I am telling you.
Thanks, just the same.
Well, all right. I was just trying to be helpful, that's all.
Jane took it hard for a while, but... Well, then we realized that only a short time before, we both had been praying that she'd be able to stop rhyming. And we realized also that although we no longer had that great contract and a career in show business to look forward to, we had each other. And so, Mr. Griffiths, when all is said and done, I guess the way it came out could really be called a happy ending, couldn't it?
Oh, yes, Mr. Kesey, it certainly could. I must confess that I listened to your story with the greatest sympathy and appreciation for both you and Mrs. Kesey.
Thank you.
I admired the way from day to day you stayed at her side, and when she cried, you tried and tried to ease her mind, and through it all, you were so kind, and... Well, I see that I've been hit.
Oh, you'll recover, bit by bit.
But just don't try to hurry it.
Thanks a lot. I hope you're right.
We know we are. Good night.
Good night.
Sears Radio Theater has been brought to you by Sears Roebuck and Company, where our policy is satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Sears, where America shops for value. The Strange Affliction was written, produced, and directed by Norman Corwin.
Forgive the intrusion, my dear Mr. Gilmore, but if you don't mind, I have still more rhymes, just a few at the close, so we can end this program right on the nose. I am the author, Norman Corwin, and I wouldn't have had to be doing this drawing if I'd written it to exact dimensions. But you know how it is with good intentions. Well, now I see that I don't have to kill more time, so back to you, Mr. Gilmore.
Your host was Andy Griffith. Our stars were Nanette Fabre and Steve Franken. Featured in the cast were Fletcher Markle, Byron Kane, Mary Jane Croft, Carly Bear, Mel Wells, Richard Erdman, True Boardman, and Janet Waldo. The music for Sears Radio Theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. This is Art Gilmore speaking. Associate Director of Sears Radio Theater is Ken McManus. Sound effects were created by Bud Tollefson. Mark Trella is Production Supervisor. And the recording engineers are Joe Wachter and Hal McDonald. The Elliott Lewis production of Sears Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI. Tomorrow's Sears Radio Theater will be a mystery with Vincent Price as your host. Let's listen.
I've given up everything for you. My husband, everything.
Oh, come now. You and your husband had separated long before we ever met.
You're taking this all so matter of fact. You don't know what it is to love.
So be sure and tune in tomorrow to Sears Radio Theater.
CBS News. Airline schedules are being reorganized because of an earlier order by the Federal Aviation Administration to temporarily ground all DC-10s. The order went into effect immediately. This is John Bohannon reporting on the CBS Radio Network. FAA investigators have turned in preliminary reports on the possible cause of Friday's DC-10 jet crash at Chicago's O'Hare International Airport. The agency's administrator, Langhorne Bond, says he had no choice.
I learned that these inspections are turning up grave and potentially dangerous deficiencies in many of the pylon mountings now being checked as a result of that order. These problems are not just with the bolts, but also in other areas of the assembly that holds DC-10 engines to the wings.
The FAA's Langhorne Bond says the inspections could take 2 or 3 days. 8 U.S. airlines have DC-10s in operation and immediately took them off the flight lines. Jack Sergall of the Airline Pilots Association goes along with the FAA decision, although he says he likes the plane.
The DC-10 is a very safe aircraft. I spoke to one of my pilots today out in Chicago, and he feels that it's an exceptional aircraft. Flies exceptionally well. One of the more well-built aircraft in the country, aside from the problem that we had with it with the wing and the cargo door. Once the cargo door was repaired, and now this problem, it's still a fine aircraft to fly.
Some delays and cancellations have been reported because of the FAA order. The ban does not apply to foreign airlines, but at least 4 have voluntarily grounded their DC-10s, Laker, Swiss Air, SAS, and Japan Airlines. In Kentucky, former Governor Louis Nunn has won the Republican primary for the governor's race on the Democrat side. Late returns show former mayor of Louisville, Harvey Sloan, is leading John Brown, Jr. A third contender, former Commerce Commissioner Terry McBrayer, has conceded. Authorities in Tennessee have issued a statewide alert for James LeMay, who had been working as a computer operator at the state controller's office. He's suspected of using a computer to bilk the state out of $18,000. LeMay is among those whose prison terms were commuted by Ray Blanton in his final days as governor, and there was new action on that today. Melissa McDonald of station WKDA, Nashville, has more.
Last January 15th, then-Tennessee Governor Ray Blanton pardoned or commuted the sentences of 52 inmates, some not recommended for release by the state's Pardons and Paroles Board. To stop further clemency actions by Blanton, Governor-elect Lamar Alexander took office 3 days early. But some of those commutation papers did not reach the warden before Blanton was ousted, and Alexander, calling the commutations invalid, took the case to court. A lower court ruled Blanton's actions legal, and when the Tennessee Supreme Court refused today to hear the case, Governor Alexander ordered the commutees released.
It was the argument of the Attorney General. It was the law of most other states. It was my considered opinion, as well as his, that in those 16 cases, the commutations were not valid. We argued that as persuasively as we could in the courts, and we lost. Now we will honor and respect the order of the court.
The last 6 commutees walked out of the Tennessee State Prison late this afternoon. Melissa McDonald, WCBS News, Nashville.
For about 7 hours last Saturday, a farmer in Pennsylvania was among the few who knew where President Carter was. Most of the press corps thought he was at Camp David, but the Altoona, Pennsylvania Mirror got the scoop and interviewed a farmer who talked with the president during a secret fishing trip to central Pennsylvania. The president defended his unannounced trip because, in his words, getting away from it all is good for him and good for the country. John Bohannon, CBS News.